saying how much they want a strong woman. What they really want is a cheerleader.
I'd like someone who's physically very frail and won't stop talking.
I just want what everybody wants. I just seem to have a harder time getting it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Maximum Film. It's episode 306, and we're traveling with some cool-ass chicks. It's your host, Ify Wadi Way, and in the studio with me are my friends. So let me introduce you to them. First up, we have one of the most esteemed critics I could ever think of in my mind at any time, and the Christmas Zaddy himself, living large and Christmas in July, Alonzo Duralde. What is good?
I exist solely in your head, Ify. That's the thing that
rent free.
Exactly. Boom. Okay. This is. I know I'm late on this, and nobody needs me to tell them this, but my what's good this week is episode 6 of season 2 of The Bear, which is one of the most extraordinary hours of television I've ever seen. Yes, it's the Christmas episode, and thank you to everybody who fulfilled my personal brand by letting me know there was a Christmas episode. But that's not why it's great. It's great because it is one of the most tense representations of a dysfunctional family holiday I've ever seen. Start passing out the Emmys for the writing, the editing, the amazing guest stars, who I will not spoil if you haven't seen it yet. But just suffice it to say, everything that you've heard about that episode is true. It's amazing. It's a great season altogether. Like, who knew that I was going to have a soft spot for Richie finally? But yeah, episode 6 is the shit.
Ooh. I haven't seen it yet, but all I know from it is that there must not be cats, because my personal brand is, hopefully people would have alerted me that there were cats on screen in it. So if I, when I get to that and I find out there's cats in that home and nobody told me.
You know, there's already a meal being made by a chain smoker. I don't think we need to throw cat hair into that equation. So there's enough happening.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, speaking of cat hair, we have the queen of the Midwest herself, Super Festival programmer, producer, Drea Clark. What else good?
So what is good with me is both a thing and a concept. And those things are cookies of today. And by that, I mean, in the last week, I have somehow, like, through various machinations or people ordered around me, sampled cookies from Levain Bakery, which they now have in LA on Larchmont, something called Brady's Bakery, and Milk Jar. And I'm a cookie head. I love a cookie as long as there's no nuts. Nuts are disgusting and taste like bark. But cookies, so good. And they, all three of these places, are making like the cookies of my dreams now, which are like a fat, dense, soft cookie. Like, I hate a thin, crisp cookie. Get out of here. Waste my time much. Like, not anymore. The cookies of 2023 are plump and dense. I like my cookies like I like my men. Plump and dense. Anyway, thrilled with the cookie options I've had lately.
I'm just glad you didn't say crumble. So we're off to a good start there.
I do like a crumble cookie, but I haven't had any here. Those are like, they're a cake. I mean, they're enormous.
Yeah, they're not even a cookie.
Yeah. These were all stupidly big. I'm not going to pretend these were delicate cookies, but
I have room in my heart for plump dense. I have room in my heart for crispy, like a good sort of like a lacy cookie with kind of a caramel thing happening. Ooh, like, sign me up. Pretty much, I'm not going to kick a cookie out of bed for eating cookies.
Oh, man. Well, that was a funny joke. And you know who's also funny? Comedian, friend of the pod, friend of me, Jenny Yang. What?
Yay, Jenny Yang.
I'm here. I am so honored to be on one of my favorite podcasts. Oh, my goodness. I remember when it used to not be called Maximum Film. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Indeed.
Okay. It was way back.
Last time you were here.
That's right. For another Asian movie. Let's go.
Yeah, yeah.
For real.
Listen, I don't mind being pigeonholed. I could talk about other movies too, but you know.
Next time, Scandinavian, where you're in.
Yeah. We're gonna find the whitest movie, and you're gonna be here.
I pigeonholed here because you have bangs. That's really what the bar was for me. Yeah.
I mean, I love representing banged Americans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's normally more representation territory, if you know what I'm saying.
Don't look up hashtag Jenny Yang bangs, guys. No. Why did I say that? This is like a very old joke of mine, and I'm using it for a podcast. This is terrible.
No one would have known that unless you said, we'll have Marissa cut it out so it seems like a fresh new joke.
Yeah. Iffy, what's good with you and your fresh new jokes?
Oh, what's good with me? I just got back from Austin RTX, which means I got, you know, stuffed with barbecue, ate that good stuff. I did not get a chance to go to Casino El Camino, which has banger burgers, but it was great. I ate a lot of food, met a lot of fans of me and various content. It's very funny whenever I'm doing like a signing for a specific platforms convention, because there was a bunch of people who at the Rooster Teeth Festival was coming up and was like, I love you, and Dropout. And I was like, this isn't what this place does, but you know, they get it. Smosh was there. You know, it's like a Avengers MCU crossover type beat. But yeah, there's going to be tons of pictures of Alfredo on stage placing his head on my crotch. Don't ask me to explain it, because I won't. So there's that. What I will
It's a safe
explain.
Space.
Yeah. It's crotch.
That's yeah. kind of what I meant.
Yeah.
It really is. It's solid. I highly recommend it. but we're going on a crazy trip with Joyride, and then we'll imagine some vacation movies of our own. But first, it's time for Itadick, our movie news segment that stands for Is This Important? Do I Care? Where we go over the week's headlines and ask ourselves those questions. So, Alonzo, why don't you kick this off?
Oh, well, so, you know, corporate-owned media is just alive and well, everybody. Last Monday, GQ.com published a piece from very talented freelance writer Jason Bailey that was sharply critical, imagine, of WB CEO David Zaslav, or WBD, I guess it is now, Warner Brothers Discovery. But shortly thereafter, the piece was replaced by a softer version of the article before being yanked altogether. GQ said the piece, quote, wasn't properly edited, unquote, while Warner Brothers complained that the article was cut because a proper journalistic process was not followed. But it has then since come out that GQ's editor-in-chief, Will Welton, is producing a movie at Warner Brothers called The Great Chinese Art Heist, casting some suspicious light on the whole debacle. Is this important? Do you care?
Well, first off, I thought we always agreed that David Zaslav was only to be mentioned as this fucking guy.
Yes. So just TFG to make sure of WBD.
Exactly. This is, I mean, it's almost non-news with how obvious this news is. Like, oh, of course this happened. Like, you know what I mean? That just the almost generic quality of the baseline nonsense of what we go through. And then it's also, it's indicative of things that are wrong with the entire structure of media conglomerates, things that are wrong with the absolute dearth of support for local news and where it puts all stories to be put out. Like, sure, GQ should be covering things, but this is also a story that could have been in 1,000 outlets in the past and gotten, you know, full attention in the light of day with whatever journalistic process. Like, but now, oh no, there's 3 magazines left and the people they cover are all owned by the same 3 mega corporations. It's such a future bummer.
No, when I was at the Wrap, like, it became a very big thing that we were the last remaining trade that wasn't also in the industry, you know, because you've got, you know, Penske Media running Variety and The Hollywood Reporter, and they have a tentacle in production. It's like, well, then how are y'all going to cover this with any kind of, you know, objectivity? What I do love about all this, though, is how Streisand affected the original article
because
it had been saved on the internet, you know, archive machine. And so way more people went and read that article because of this kerfuffle than if GQ had just sort of shut up and bitten their lip and just let it pass as one of a million articles talking about how David Zaslav is that fucking guy. guy. But because they like tinkered with it and then Jason wanted to take his name off it and then they yanked the whole thing, suddenly it became this cause celeb and everybody was tweeting it and sharing it. And so that article got a ton more traction off of GQ.com, where it had already been pulled, so they didn't even get like the ad revenue for it. Well done, everybody.
Yeah, it's always funny when you watch that happen, but it is what you get when you allow things like this to happen is Variety's coverage of the writer's strike, you know, where it's just like very one-sided and not even hiding it when you're getting it. You know, it's like, we get it. Everyone does it, you know, where you're trying to just, you know, play softball. But when you start doing like full on this, that's when this happens. I feel like I said nothing, but hopefully it resonates with someone.
Everyone's out here trying to pitch a TV show. My fertility doctor tried to pitch me his life story. Okay. So, you know what I mean? I am not at all like surprised that journalistic head honchos are now, you know, in the pockets of that fucking guy, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's true. And also, I mean, fine, someone who's the editor in chief of a magazine, that's presumably something they're all involved with.
Yeah.
But it's the lack of how many outlets there are. It's the lack of any kind of standards in the first place of either recusing, announcing. Exactly. Like, I just remember in the past reading like Entertainment Weekly or something, and they'll write about Christopher Nolan and it, you know, mention a movie, and then in that be like, Entertainment Weekly is a subsidiary of Warner Bros.
Time
like,
Warner, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there were so many things like that all my whole life that I've read that I'm like, I don't care. Why would I care? But that's why they're there, is just to be upfront about those connections. But instead, you know, to pull things, they just made it real, real shifty. Speaking of shifty, nope, not at all. Speaking of movies. Minnesota's Golden Boys, the Coen brothers, are getting back together.
Oh, good.
In an interview for the August issue of Empire magazine, Ethan Coen said he's developing a new project with his brother Joel. No details yet on any aspect of that potential film, but it is still welcome news for any cinephiles who worried the two might never join forces again. It has been 5 years since the last project Ethan and Joel made together, The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, which has some real heartbreaking stuff in it. I guarantee you should check it out. Eden, just ask me which ones are the best. Joel directed 2021's The Tragedy of Macbeth, which we discussed here on this podcast. And Ethan partnered with Trisha Cook, a filmmaker whom he is also married to, for the upcoming Drive Away Dolls. Is this important, gang? Do you care?
Well, sure. I mean, I look, the Drive Away Dolls trailer, by the way, looks really good, I have to say. And I try not to watch trailers, but I thought it was pretty awesome looking. But yeah, obviously, like, the Coens are among the most important filmmakers of our generation. And, you know, better together than apart. So, yay.
Yeah. Everyone knows I love my Coen bros. I love them to death. Excited to see how they ride again. Let's buckle up.
My Coen bros.
My Coen.
I also am appreciative that this tells me that there is not a Noel and what's the other Gallagher
Liam.
Brother? This is not a Noel and Liam Gallagher sort of situation from Oasis, because that would truly bum me out.
Like, that would suck.
These nice Jewish boys from Minnesota, like, I want to know that they can do their own thing and then get back together, do a family movie again. I, you know, that's not the Midwestern way, is hyper-bombastic, decades-long broadcast arguments with your sibling. I mean, I'm interested in that. My brother, as of yet, will not play ball, but I do, and I do like the idea, too. If you watch, if you've ever seen any footage or behind-the-scenes thing, there's something really unique about how directing teams work, and to figure out that kind of partnership and approach. They are, as Alonzo said, there's, you know, it's not just because they've happened to make so many films. They've crafted a really strong authorial voice between the two of them. And it is, it's the merging of their sensibilities and skills. And I really do like what they create as a duo. So not just how nice to have it, but like artistically, I'm very interested in this. And Marissa included a great note here. And that Ethan said that the two brothers never would have made a movie like Drive Away Dolls. So certainly explore your other avenues, but glad to have them come back together. I am sure we will either talk about this as one of our films, or most likely it will also be somebody's staff pick in the future.
Yeah.
Now, definitely. If we could just get Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson to start writing together again.
Oh, yeah, get rid of Roman Coppola. Get Owen Wilson back in there.
Get him in the chair. All right. Well, no clean segue for this. I'm going to just read the headline. Barbie is banned in Vietnam over interpretation of map details. An image of a crudely but cutely drawn map appears briefly in the trailer for the new Barbie movie. Now, one dotted line on the map has gotten the film banned in Vietnam. A dashed squiggle coming out of a continent marked Asia on the map looks to officials in Vietnam like the 9-dash line, a demarcation that represents the territorial claims by China in the South China Sea. The filmmakers and studio have denied any attempted messaging, pointing to the map's childlike quality and whimsical inaccuracy. Is this important? Do you care?
Holy shit.
This screams out to be covered in post, right?
Yeah. I want you to know, if the world ends because that our assassination of Franz Ferdinand is the Barbie graphic design team who did like a couple of dots outside of an inaccurate sketching of Asia that looks like basically Idaho, let us all shuffle off this mortal coil together that way. I'm fine with that. That's hilarious to me.
It would serve us right. Jenny, I cut you off. What were you saying?
Oh, I was just like, damn. I mean, this is classic. As someone who was born in Taiwan, who's Taiwanese Chinese, well,
you know.
I don't know if you know the geopolitics of Taiwan and mainland China, but they are hypersensitive, that is, the Chinese government, to any geographical depictions of their territory. And it would be hilarious, if not very disturbing.
Oh, yeah, if it's not actually a way that we're all going to die somehow.
Exactly.
No, I think... It is so specific, too, and it will be interesting if anything else comes out of it, or if it was just, like, the art direction team. The dots that they're mentioning are... There's other dots on other side of this map. It's designed to look like a child drew it. Like, it is a mess. But also, it's still kind of a pointed succession of these nine... Who knows?
Well,
who knows, I just, if someone thought they were doing something funny with that, like...
I just feel like the only reason why anyone should care about this kind of news is the fact that as we globalize, as corporations consolidate and take over creative control of all the things that we digest and ingest, all the money, the big money, will care about what China thinks. And this is what concerns me. This doesn't just affect the simple line drawing on Barbie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is not new, though. I mean, like, there's been an ongoing thing about, like, I seem to recall the remake of Red Dawn at the last minute. They made the invading Chinese army the North Korean army. And just,
I didn't,
like,
know that.
Yeah, change the flags and post. Like, this is there's been a lot of eggshell walking when it comes to
But this
to
one's interesting because it's banned in Vietnam. It's
right.
It's
no. This is now the other direction, you know. Mm-hmm. But I can only hope it's just like somebody was doodling. It's like, this will make it look like a map. And not that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, don't know, but I'm definitely still fine with the planet ending because of Barbie.
Yeah, no, I was saying, I do see the thing where it is like it could be early overcorrection where they're like, China would like it if we said that they had this area, and we must make them happy. And Vietnam's like, all right, well, fuck you then.
Yeah, basically.
And then Oppenheimer gives ideas to other countries. They're like, yeah, maybe we should. That's how Barbenheimer happens.
Barbenheimer.
All right, well, on that note, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, we're going for a joyride.
Hey, Max Fun listeners, this is Cameron Esposito. I'm a stand-up comic, actor, writer, best-selling author, and podcaster. I got a great show called Query where I interview LGBTQ+ luminaries across a bunch of fields. People in entertainment, astronauts, musicians, rock stars. I am bringing the show to maximum fun. You can listen right now, and I am so happy to be on this network. We have new episodes out every Monday. You can listen at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Max Film. I'm your host, Ivy Way. In the studio with me are...
Drea Clark.
Jenny Yang.
Alonzo Duraldi.
Today's movie is a broad comedy that marks the directorial debut of Adele Lim, best known as the screenwriter of Crazy Rich Asians and Raya the Last Dragon. So Drea, would you mind giving us a brief synopsis of Joyride?
Yes. And I don't know if it matters. She co-wrote Crazy Rich Asians, but...
Yeah.
Okay, Joyride! We meet two friends who meet when they are very young, Audrey and Lolo. They are young Chinese-American girls in a town full of white kids, and also our kindred spirits become fast friends, grow up together, become amazing young women. And when Audrey, who's become a very successful lawyer, is sent on a business trip to China, she brings Lolo along to be her interpreter and then meets up there with her best friend from college, Kat. And they are also joined by an exceptionally wonderful weird-ass cousin named Deadeye, whom I'm enamored with forever. So it is the four of them touring the country, hijinks galore, sexcapades, K-pop somehow. And then also, Audrey's birth mother has a storyline that comes through because that sort of wraps in. And it's about discongented is what I just said. Discongented. Alonzo, what word am I looking for?
Disjointed.
Disjointed. Yep. And it is a little disjointed, but it is all happening. Friendship, road trip, across the seas, Joyride.
Yes, yes, yes. So how familiar are you with these stars? What did you think of them? I'm going to go ahead and give my usual disclosure. I am Sherry Cola. I know through comedy, homie. Stephanie Hsu, definitely waiting to meet her at a bar. Definitely still thirsting from Everything Everywhere. So if you see us in pictures and TMZ later, know that this was taken before that and anything else.
The Jobu Pataki does not have time for you, Iffy.
You are not the one she is looking for.
Exactly. We'll see. We will see. When I'm in my thotty shirt, looking nice and moist at the bar because I've got my skincare thanks to Drea. I digress. So Stephanie, Sherry, I went in kind of knowing, rooting for, excited about. Lots of other cool, like...
Ashley Park is the lead and is fantastic. A lot of people
in
know
Girls
her
Five
from...
Era, too? Question mark?
Yeah, well, she's the one that dies Girls Five Eva, but she's also in Emily in Paris. I think has a big following from that. The actor that plays Deadeye was new to me, and I was obsessed.
And I think Sabrina Wu is their name, and has mainly been a writer up until this point, like was a writer on the... I can never pronounce the last name, but the new Doogie that they did on Disney Plus. And I think this is one of their first like acting roles. But yeah, I'm a fan. I had never heard of Sherry Cola before, but the night after I saw Joyride, I saw Shortcomings, which is coming out in a month, Randall Park's movie that premiered at Sundance. I've declared this the summer of Sherry Cola, and you can step to me and tell me I'm wrong, and I will tell you that no, I'm not.
I'm on your side with that.
I mean, is this the time for disclosures? Because I
have a few. Go ahead, drop.
We like to consider it more of a name drop.
I know. But this is, earlier we were talking about, journalistic integrity. And so this is my time.
Thank you, Jenny.
There you go.
Hello. Okay. I am totally fully bought by Amazon. No. Number one, I auditioned for the Deadeye. No. Oh. Everyone auditioned for it. I literally got the audition being like, I don't know what these characters are, but I know for sure Sherry Cole is going to be in this movie without talking to Sherry. Because this is truly the season of Sherry Cola. And Sherry is a good friend of mine. I am a friend acquainted with Adele Lim, the director, and acquainted with Cherry and Teresa, the writers of the movie, acquainted with Stephanie Hsu.
This That's is just what an I was Asian, waiting for. Okay.
This is just an Asian American comedy you don't talk community. After the pot. If he's already out here before we review this movie, trying to get an in with Stephanie Hsu, don't you have enough thoughty energy out? Plates
I can help
spinning.
Unleash yours, Jenny. Let's work together.
Anyway, full disclosure, I'm a part of this Asian American creative comedy community, and I am so proud of them.
Yeah.
That's it. Mm.
I am not a part of it at all, and very proud of them as well. In that maternal way that I like to be proud of people. I think this movie is it was marketed, like the whole element of it, right, is it's got like a lot of Hangover energy, a lot of Alonzo. What's the other? I feel like
I like to think that the pitch here was it's like Bridesmaids meets Return to Seoul.
Return to Seoul. The whole time I was thinking of, I'm
Lock
like, if you watched, if you watched Return to Seoul in this back to back, fascinating. Mm. And you got, and like when we discussed Return to Seoul, I am very interested in stories of adoption. Transracial adoption is particularly, it's such a crux of complications, and there's a lot of lovely warm stories. And in this, our lead character, played by Ashley Park, again, Audrey was adopted, and her parents are anxious for her to meet another, you know, Chinese girl so she can have that. And that was where I'm from in Minnesota. We have
the child of immigrants versus the child of white adoptees definitely plays in a really interesting way.
And there is something of like white parents who are adopting kids of color, whatever their backgrounds are. So a lot of them do try and connect them culturally. And a lot of them, there's broad mess ups in doing that, which is the case of this. And I really liked that this film, for all of its like there's a set piece in this, which is like a 4-part hookup that leads to like physical catastrophes that I was like, this is so, if this was just revolving around women in different like insane sexcapades, already great, like comedic sex pieces, that it's Asian women and then also a lot of Asian men in that mix, I'm like, oh, those are demographics that are not often getting portrayed as sexy at all, let alone sexcapade level of sexy. Do you know what I mean? Like, oh, there's tools. There's multiple people. There's all sorts of nonsense involved. So I was thrilled by all of that. And that to be building all of those things, your sort of hangover energy, and then to also be like, you know, but I want to make this personal and doing a little more. And so we're also going to be putting in something about adoption, transracial, like all of these things that have a little more complexity to it. I do applaud there's a lot of ambition to what the story was taking on.
Yeah.
What I love is that you have not seen this movie before. Do you know what I'm saying? This is 100%. No one has grounded this in such aggressive comedy writing, right? With an Asian American storyline, with sort of strong, you know, women NB kind of like, you know, leading energy. And that to me is already incredible. Just as a comedian, you know, as an Asian American female comedian, seeing that, you know, hardcore comedy writers who happen to be Asian American women doing this kind of a movie, it's just like, it's a spectacle. Like, truly, I'm like, wow, what is even happening? I've never seen this.
I'm glad you brought that up again. There's all sorts of things going on, but this is a capital C comedy.
Yes.
This is not the farewell drama that has a few funny bits. This is not Crazy Rich Asians, which is a love story with some funny bits. This is a comedy, a broad-ass comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's what really shines and what I like about it, too, is I think, you know, everyone – you know, me and Jenny have been in enough pitch rooms, I'm sure Dre as well, to have heard that everyone feels everything has been done. And we try so hard to say, yeah, but it hasn't been done with Black people. It hasn't been done with Asian people.
Right.
And they seem like they don't get why that makes sense. And you see it here now, because like this adoption story just adds another layer to it. And this, and it's one of those, I say this on the pod all the time, is how hyperspecificity meets a high level of relatability. Because even as like a, you know, Nigerian first generation immigrant, I was relating to this idea of connection with your culture, and just this element of someone who is going back home, doesn't speak the language that you know, that is there, has the friend that they kind of look down on, that is completely tapped in the culture. And you kind of see that it isn't that they look down on them. There's this level of jealousy of them seeming so tapped in with something they wish they could be in, and kind of caught in the middle of being, you know, too white for your Asian people, too Asian for the white people. So you're sitting in this in-between area, and having them dive headfirst into it, all while having a body double full frontal nudity scene, you know, all while like even speaking of comedy, like heightening of looking into the vagina and
oh my god, that was amazing.
You know, just like different. And the reason I always love when, you know, minorities get to make these comedies is like, I love the first scene where they first meet, and you have that kid say the racist thing and just is immediately karmically punished for it. And I think that is such a cathartic thing for all people who grew up dealing with that. And it was like, oh, this is the type of shit I wish would have happened when I dealt with this. Yeah. And now I get to put it on TV, make it a comedic relief, and then move on. So it is why I will always champion shit like this being made.
And yeah. I love the specificity of something that is not the world that I grew up in or know firsthand, even if I don't always completely get it. Like, Jenny, if you want to explain to me later what a plastic bag full of other plastic bags Chinese means. I don't specifically know what it means, but I know it's funny, and I can relate to the idea of that being a specific kind of person. So yeah, you know, so often in the past, you know, I mean, like I just did this book about queer history, and you would see these films that were like trying to tell queer stories, but they were made by straight people, and they just, there was something that's lost in the translation. So like when people are getting to tell their own stuff and tell them the way they would tell them to other people like them, and we're just the audience who are not part of that community are just along for the ride and get to soak all that up. Like, I love that. It's like I'm eavesdropping on a conversation that would never happen around me, but I'm getting all these great details.
Right. Have you, you've never, Alonso, eaten your Cheetos with chopsticks?
Oh, I do it all the time.
Okay, see, so then you're part of the culture. You have been inducted. I mean, I think for me, I just, you know, in terms of talking about representation, this movie was written for me. It is my shit. I eat Cheetos with chopsticks. You know what I mean? I make fun of other Asians. Like, this is what is all happening within this conversation of this movie. I think the one thing that I would love to see my Asian American creative community move forward on is representation around Asian adoptee stories. Because as much as the visibility of that storyline is powerful and, you know, it needs to be elevated, I personally have friends who are Asian adoptees, who work in entertainment, who have varying opinions about, you know, productions, especially big productions like this, who are comedies, number one, making, you know, sort of making fun in the context of a, you know, birth parent search story, as well as, you know, having sort of questions around how much of an actual Asian adoptee voice was a part of the creation of the story. And so, you know, on the one hand, I am so excited as an Asian American comedian who happens to be a woman to see the sort of like balls out, labias out kind of R-rated comedy. But I also have this part of me that wants to see my community move forward in thinking about what it means to represent even another sub community that might be feeling vulnerable. You know what I mean? I personally have friends who literally were like, I watched it and I was completely triggered. I was crying. Like, this is in a bad way, you know, versus others who were crying in a good way, who are like adopted. Yeah. So it's just, I think this is, as we kind of do representation, figure it out as a community, as a creative community, I feel like that's one thing I wanted to flag.
Yeah. Do you know of this trio of writers? Do you know if any of them are adopted?
As far as I know, none of them are. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is hard, that what happens with representation is in media, is you get, unfortunately, I feel like when someone gets to carry this, they're forced to carry the thing to represent everyone. Whereas, exactly. Like, I think as someone, I'm not a cinema nerd at anything, but in this same year, we've gotten two adoption stories. So it is like, if this wasn't your cup of tea, you can watch A Road to Soul and see if that connects with you more. Mm-hmm. Or I don't think that's specifically an adoption. Yeah, it is.
Okay. Yeah, no, it is.
The two women in Return to Soul and in Joyride have actually kind of similar ambivalence about looking for their birth mothers, which is pretty, it's common, like, especially in, it's very gendered, like, most adopted men in my what I've come across are much less interested in that outreach. And the women who are, it's a very fraught and complicated decision to make for yourself, because it's putting, you're putting value on what your current relationship is. But I also agree with Jenny, like, there's millions of stories that could be told. There's also many, many well-meaning, hopefully well-meaning white people who adopted, if it's Asian kids or whatever, who had zero interest in connecting them with anything of their culture. And you do get a small nod to that, like with the Audrey character, what she realizes when she's there, like, both, she has this great moment when they land, when she's like, oh, we're the majority. Like, she was raised in a white family and she's in a place, she's like, oh, I look around and just see people that look like me. Like,
oh, it's so nice.
So it's so wonderful. And like, you could see, it's like, she takes this breath of air that she doesn't know she's like been holding. And that's great. But then she also has, oh, and all of them know that I am not from here and I still don't connect here. And also, I am the only one in our group that doesn't have the language, that doesn't have the familiarity with the drink. Like, it's the nuances and complexities there would be great to see explored in so many ways.
And I'll tell you, I don't know if this would be the case for like the character of Lolo, but I can tell you, in Spain, the second I open my mouth, they know I am not from there. And my sister, who has lived, she was born in the States and, you know, moved there and has lived there for now, like, 35 years. I said, have you finally crossed the line where they think that you are from there? She goes, no, now they think I'm from Cuba. Like, they know I'm not actually, they know that I'm not like native Spaniard speaker, but at least they think I'm from another Spanish speaking country and not from the United States.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So yes, I think all of these are great things to consider, but I definitely agree with you, Jenny. I just also have the thing of just, I always feel bad when like it is on the onus, because I don't, like, since Crazy Rich Asians, I don't think there's been like this big all like Asian cast hard comedy. You know, almost like, I was, this would remind me like the Girls Trip moment and how like you know, so it is like this thing, and hopefully this is after this strike, you know, this is a moment where we can push forward and keep having diverse stories and those folks who have different takes on stories, you know, there, because, you know, I remember, you know, there's some conversations around Coda where people were like, that's not my experience being a child of deaf parents. It's like, it's one movie. Let's all get in there and make, you know, our stories, and hopefully it'll resonate with the people it resonates with.
And this is a vote with your dollars moment, I want to say.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's so important, because I feel like we need to have more and more varied stories and a chance to swing for the fences, as well as make small, intimate movies. You know, like, I feel like there's this through line of, like, Joy Luck Club to Crazy Rich Asians, and then we had, you know, struggling multiverse Asians, you know, and then we got to, and then now we have chaotic, horny Asians. I want to keep going. I want to keep that thread going. And rather, and what I'm afraid of after this strike and potential SAG strike is how the adjustment in this, you know, entertainment industry might not allow for more
Oh, yeah.
Diverse programming to happen, you know? So I feel like that's sort of always on the back of my mind, you know, as we move forward.
Yeah. Definitely.
I mean, look, when I was urging people to see Bros for all the good that did, I would always say, like, if this movie is a hit, it doesn't guarantee that they're going to make a ton more. But if it bombs, then it becomes the excuse to not make anything for like 5 years.
Yeah. And that's just what I was going to say, is like, they're always looking for excuses. You know, they always, we've heard them all.
The hits are a fluke, but the bombs are your fault.
You exactly. That's why we have the representation sweats. That's the term my friends and I created when we were like talking about Fresh Off the Boat when it first came out, because we were so sweaty, we were so nervous about what was going to be portrayed, you know. And so every time something comes, like, you're like, wait, there's an Asian face on this poster, what's going to happen, oh god, you know. So you get the representation sweats.
Yes. Oh, that's such a good term.
And apparently the original title of the screenplay was Joy Fuck Club.
Oh, 100%. So. And that's, it needed to be done.
Perfect. Vote.
Yes. The way we vote here on the pod is screen it being the highest, stream it being the next level, and skip it being self-explanatory. So who wants to kick this off?
For sure, screen it. Screen it in a theater with a whole lot of people, which is how I saw it. I had a great time. This is the kind of comedy that really plays well to an audience. And I want to quote something that Dave pointed out that I thought was really great. When No Hard Feelings opened a few weeks back, and they were really touting its R-ratedness, afterwards he goes, you know what? There's one scene of nudity, and it's comedy nudity, but it's not sex nudity. And Joyride goes for the sex nudity along with like the sex comedy and the sex everything, which is awesome. And the women have agency and they're the ones running the show. And as Drea pointed out, some wonderful Asian men objectification as well, which we never get nearly enough of from U.S. movies.
I delighted in objectifying those men. I want you to know. Chris Pang forever. I am also a screen it. I also... You know, doubling up what we just said, screen it and screen it soon. Vote with your box office dollars, and you will definitely enjoy this. Saw this in a theater. Saw this with our own Laura Swisher.
Yeah, yeah.
Who I had to shush, and I do want that on this recording. Had to shush her up during this movie. But this theater, like, laughed so hard so many times, and it was tremendous to hear. And I'm excited to see what else Adele Lim does. I think that this is like her directorial debut. I think she's currently a stronger writer than she is director, which only means she's going to become a better and better director. And I truly can't wait to see what she does next. Does next. Those are words. Can't wait.
Yes.
Jenny.
Jenny.
Oh, screen it. Been screening it. Keep screening it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's just when you want to laugh with a group. That's why I'm a stand-up comedian. That's why you do live shows. You want to hear the laughter with others. It unifies you. It gives you soul and power. Like, just go and watch it in a theater. Bring all your friends.
Yes. And you know me, you know how it is. You already feel it. It's a screen it for me. Screen it. You know, it's worth it. Well, you ain't seen nothing till you seen the POV from the inside of a vagina. That's really that I lived in a new way. And so
not since Little Shop of Horrors the musical.
Well, not since I was given birth to.
Yeah, as I came out with the camera. We'll be right back after here from another show from Maximum Fun.
It's official. MaxFun has become a co-op.
We're now a worker-owned network of artist-owned shows supported directly by you.
Thanks to supporters and listeners like you, MaxFun will always be a place where employees have a say.
Thanks to you, shows can continue to partner with an independent, values-driven network.
Thanks to you, we're able to carry on our commitment to our shows and the community we've grown together.
Learn more about what becoming a co-op means for us and you at MaximumFun.org/co-op. That's MaximumFun.org/COOP.
Yeah. Welcome back to Max Film. I'm your host, Ify Wadi Wade, and in the studio with me are
Alonzo Duralde,
Jenny Yang,
Drea Clark.
And in today's movie, we saw a group of American buddies traveling to China and Korea together. Over the years, the cast of many movies and TV shows have been sent on fictional vacations, whether it's the Griswolds on a European vacation, oblivious 20-somethings experiencing their first Midsommar, or the Sex and the City gals headed to Abu Dhabi. Now it's your turn. Pick any group of friends or family from a film or TV and send them on a movie vacation anywhere in the world. Who do you send? Where do you send them? And what's the movie called? What's the genre?
I'm going to cheat a little and do what I think would be a great sequel that I'm going to just put that there in the ether and hope that maybe it happens. So I am a big fan of Greg Mottola's debut feature, the 1996 comedy The Day Trippers, which is about a group of uptight Long Islanders packing into the car and going into New York City for the day to try and track somebody down. And so the cast includes Hope Davis, Stanley Tucci, Parker Posey, Liev Schreiber, the late Anne Meara, alas, will not be back for the sequel, I guess. But I'm thinking the only thing that would be funnier than packing a bunch of Long Islanders into one car and making them navigate Manhattan would be to pack them all in an RV and have them drive from Los Angeles to San Francisco. you call it the Road Trippers, and bam, we have a movie.
Ooh, I like that.
I like that, too.
The Day Trippers premiered at Slam Dance.
Yes, it did.
Festival. It was one of our very first noteworthy titles.
Mm-hmm. That's where I saw it.
No, you did not. Oh, crazy.
I did.
Gets around. I like that. Also, I like anything with Hope Davis, so you had me there.
There you go.
How do you screw that up? Plus, you have the
Parker
title.
Posey driving an RV. I mean, we need to see that, right, in a movie?
Every day of my life.
Yeah.
Also, like, in my commute. I'm never not going to want to see that. Okay, mine, I have one. It's broader. But I would like to see the cast of The Fellowship of the Rings. So all of those sweet
them dorks, as themselves or the characters?
The characters.
Okay.
Oh, I would like the characters, but I somehow want them now. Basically, I want that energy of what we do in the shadows of, like, those vampires that are, like, existing in Wellington, but they're out of time and space. But so I want them brought from Middle Earth to now, and I want them, the movie I want in the style of, like, Christopher Guest, like, mockumentary style. But I want them to actually be, like, they're playing characters, a meta element of it, if you will. Basically,
they're LARPers.
They're LARPers. That's what I'm getting at. I want a Christopher Guest mockumentary about the LARPing community, but it contains the people from the Fellowship of the Ring. But I also, of course, because they don't have nearly enough any diversity in that lineup, I want my Cate Blanchett in there. I want Liv Tyler.
Liv Tyler. Yep.
Anyway, I would like to see them LARPing and getting very excited about the LARPing. I want the direct-to-camera from Aragorn about how he's mad that someone keeps, like, denying his chainmail. I realize that the movie Role Models has already done right by the LARPer community when it comes to comedy. So mine is a variation of that. I also contemplated, if not LARPing, then maybe they're super into Dungeons and Dragons, and it, like, gives them a reason of why they get to wear cloaks everywhere. And the title, regardless. And I think you can agree there's not going to be any confusion about this title at all, but I want it to be called Precious. So it may be spelled and sound a lot like a title that already exists, but that has a longer, like, as inspired by them.
Just give it a subtitle not based on the novel Push by Sapphire.
Oh my God, thank you.
Then everybody will know what we're talking about.
Not based on the novel Push by Sapphire. Perfect. Done. There's mine.
Okay, so I have this dream of gathering all the original Joy Luck Club daughters and having them, which I have befriended 3 out of 4. I just need to make sure I become friends with Ming-Na Wen.
So less of a dream and more of a real life quest.
Yes.
Got it. Got it.
So I want the daughters of the Joy Luck Club to do a sort of John Wick style movie crossed with Landlady from Kung Fu Hustle energy, where they run Los Angeles, okay, somehow with some nefarious underworld kind of operation. And and it's like, you know, 70% John Wick, 30% comedy. I just think it should be called The Aunties.
The Aunties!
That is solid.
I'm in.
Yes.
Sold.
I'm in.
Oh, man. Okay. So one of these days we're going to have you're going to go to a theater and see an actual film come out from one of these writing prompts that Marissa just creates for fun. But this one's going to be a little more fun, more kooky, and a good little kind of personal eulogy, which is I will take the Grand Crew cast, and Ghana did this big thing called The Return. And it was basically like their kind of birthright for Black Americans, where if you came back there, you would be able to get what's the word, citizenship to Ghana, and kind of it was like a party too, and it was like it kind of introducing Black Americans to the culture, kind of just extending that olive branch that in the diaspora that is often talked about. And I think it would have been a real cool movie, Six Seasons in a Movie, where the whole cast goes back and you get to go through each of their experiences, getting in touch with their Ghanaian side. And obviously some people are going to fall in love. Some people are going to fall into trouble, but it's just like a full-on travel comedy with the cast as they get deep within themselves.
If you follow up, Q, how quickly is Carl Tart going to be wearing a dashiki?
Oh, it's going to be as soon as they land.
My interest in this movie completely balances on how fast you get Carl Tart into a dashiki.
Oh yeah, he's going to be the one who who learned all the language over the flight over, and so he's going to be the one speaking fluent to all the cast, and he knows they don't understand, but he's doing it to fuck with them.
Follow up pitch: can I then join this cast and try a 90 Day Fiance Carl Tart, who is an American who is there on his birthright trip, but I think I'm meaning
he's a native
Ghana prince.
Oh dear.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm all in.
Sorry, I got too inspired. The dashiki. It just sent me in directions.
Ify, I just want you to know, by the way, I gave a not very good review to Ruby Gilman Teenage Kraken, but because Echo Kellum and Nicole Byer are in the voice cast, I referred to them as Grand Crew alumni. Aww.
Yes. Big shout out. It's all good. I feel like I've been pitching weird mermaids for a while because Nigerian mermaids are different than the Euro mermaids. So I need that to fail. So when I do it, it's way cooler.
There we go.
Oh, well, you know, I guess now it's time for staff picks. It could be any movie at all. So who wants to kick it off?
I'll go. I have a film that premiered at the most recent Tribeca last month. Woo. It is a first-time female filmmaker named Alice Troughton. She is a British playwright. It's called The Lesson, and it stars Richard E. Grant, Julie Delpy, and Daryl McCormick from Good Luck to You, Leo Grand, who I am convinced is going to be the biggest star of the next decade. And maybe by not convinced, it's just that I want it so
And Mr.
much.
Drea Clark.
And Mr. Dre, the future Mr. Dre Clark. No, 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 thank you. Did you not hear me say I like him plump and dense?
Oh, right, sorry, yes.
Yep. The Lesson is, it's like a noir thriller. It is just the three of them. It's a three-hander, if you will. And it is about Richard E. Grant plays this writer, and Daryl McCormick plays an up-and-coming writer who comes out to, like, help him at his estate, and there's kind of craftiness happening and what's going on and mystery. And he's there to tutor their son. Okay, four-hander. There's four hands. eight hands if you count all four of the people having two hands. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Betrayal, jealousy, thriller, noir. Check it out. The Lesson, first-time filmmaker. Support it as you will.
I'm going to recommend, because I know a lot of people are watching the Wham! Documentary on Netflix, and they certainly should. A great double feature with that is a new doc that is airing on Max called Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed. Different decade, same closet. And it's a really fascinating look at just Hudson's career. I think a lot of people, you know, of this generation maybe don't know who he was or remember him. And like, he was the shit of the 1950s. Like, he was such a huge, huge star, and having to live such a huge lie to, you know, have a career in that era. And so it's a retrospective about his career, but also this look at, you know, he became sort of like the first high profile person with AIDS in this country, mm-hmm. and how the media handled that, and how he tried to sort of, you know, get around that for as long as he could. And it's a fascinating look at how, you know, as late as the 80s and to some extent even now, the way that the mainstream media treats somebody being in the closet, like being outed or coming out themselves, they start using words like admitted and, you know, like, you know, he was fooling us all along. And it's like, it's the whole onus on the person in the closet as though they were like some pathological liar, and not, oh, this culture that we built made it impossible for you to live any other way if you wanted to have like a career, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's directed by Stephen Kayak, who's a really great doc filmmaker. He did Scott Walker, 30th Century Man, and We Are X, and quite a few other films that are really terrific. I like this one a lot. It's got some great interviews with people who knew Hudson, including Armistead Maupin and various other kind of like former lovers and boyfriends who are still around and who are very saucy old gay men telling it all now in a really fun way. So, yeah, Rock Hudson, All That Heaven Allowed. It's on Max. Check it out.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
I just know that when someone is a big star like Rock Hudson, because my parents who are immigrants know how to say his name in Chinese.
Ooh.
I don't know what it is. I'll
I was about
I'll
to ask.
Like, she's like, her son. I don't know. All right. So I feel like this is a movie that amongst Asian Americans and like sort of indie film people, they might think about all the time. But I think if we're talking about Joyride, also go see Better Luck Tomorrow.
There we go.
We're Justin Lin, yeah.
It's a Justin Lin original before that season of True Detective, before Fast and Furious. You know, it's an incredible representation of, I guess, San Fernando Valley 90s Asian American youths. And it's just like a cool, well-done movie that like is funny. You get the sense of the soul of the characters. I feel like it really represented how I grew up in Southern California. I went through a scandal, much like how they went through a scandal, except there was less dead bodies. I went through a high school scandal with Asian Americans and academic cheating. And so I remember when I finally saw that movie, I was like, oh, wow, this is like very resonant.
That movie, which, you know, also debuted at the Sundance Film Festival.
Yes.
Famously. A lot of festival films discussed today.
Yeah, with Roger Warms Ebert. And with, there's a clip online with Roger Ebert.
Yeah, it's a great one.
If you look that up and Google it.
And it's the first time that Sung Kang played Han, which, according to Justin Lin, is the same character in the Fast movie.
That's so right.
Justice for Han.
It's canonical. And it's on Paramount Plus.
Wonderful.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
Yes.
Iffy, do you have one?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to do the layup. Crazy Rich Asians. Go ahead. I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I would say Everything Everywhere All at Once, but I feel like that's too close. We just do, you know, just as in last year, but we did that one. But Crazy Rich Asians. Peep it. And, you know, also, you know, we didn't talk a lot about the writers, but they're both Family Guy writers. Just like, you know, when you say capital C, because, you know, I feel like we talk about excuses, right? Excuses in this industry that are used against us. And there's no one more storied than these writers. Like, if you look at their credentials, you know, it's easy peasy. Cherry was at one time the only female writer on Family Guy. Crazy. No. That doesn't normally happen in writers' rooms. but yeah, I just wanted to shout that out as a writer. And
Adele Lim is a hero to screenwriters for telling Warner Brothers to go fuck themselves when they tried to like underpay her for the next Crazy Rich Asians movie compared with the white guy who was working with her. So, you know, good on her for that.
Yeah. Thank you for shouting that out, Alonzo. Double shout that out. You know, the things I will say about white writers / directors who are sons of certain people would get this show banned from the air. But just know, You can fail upwards.
You're not glued to the idol. If
he'll ask you.
So it's time for us to bring this whole plane for a landing. So big thank you to Jenny Yang, my friend of the pod. I wasn't hyping it up enough. Amazing comedian, has a dope tour that's starting up. But you know, you can tell listeners what you got going on, where they can find you. But I just reminded you because a lot of comedians come on here, forget to talk about their tours.
Oh no!
Tell us about it. He said, oh, no.
I will tell you all about my tour. I am going on tour, truly on tour, for the first time since the pandemic. It's called the Fiance Energy Tour. And I'm kicking it off July 20th in New York at Union Hall.
Ooh.
Going to Boston, going to Vermont, then Philly. Then we're going to be in the Midwest later this year and on the West Coast. So go to jennyyang.tv. I'd love to see you at my shows. Say hello. Be like, I am a Maximum Film fan. I had to come see you. Yeah, so I'm doing my stand-up comedy, jennyyang.tv, especially on the East Coast. Come and see me.
Excellent.
Woof. And next time there's a movie with a fjord in it, we will have you back.
Yes.
yeah, don't worry. The next, I'm telling you, whitest films from now on. So the next Wes Anderson, that Coen Brothers film that's about to come on, you'll be on it. You know?
A blonde lady, if it's a blonde white lady, you know, I'm into that.
If they make a Karen sequel, you know.
Thank you. okay, let's just...
Drea, Alonzo, thank you for another wonderful show. It's great having you here all the time and talking with you. And you, the listeners, I got some news for you. Next week, we'll be talking about theater camp.
Woo-hoo!
And if you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, tweet at us at @maximum_film. Our Facebook group can be found at www.facebook.com/groups/maximumfilm or send us an email at maximumfilm@maximumfun.org. Our producer is the wonderful Marissa Flaxbart. Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. And this is a production of Maximum Fun. Bye-bye.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network.
Of artist-owned shows.
Supported
directly
by you.